texting in, and on my Facebook page, you also saw our post about the anniversary of COVID. World Health Organization said it's a pandemic. And really, at that time, I think 25 people in Illinois had been identified as having COVID. So March 11th of 2020 was still so early, you really had no idea. But suddenly, the house of cards fell. You know, Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson said, oh, we have COVID. And a basketball game didn't happen, even as the players were warming up on the sideline. And the president said there will be a travel ban from Europe. And it just all hit the fan that one day. That same day, they decided they would not have the St. Patrick's Day parade in Chicago. So I asked you, what was the moment you realized this is real? And that would be 4 years ago yesterday. And so today we've been reading your notes. Hey, John Williams, a friend of mine and I were at Stan's Donuts, and there was nobody in there on a Saturday morning. People were wandering the streets of Streeterville, dressed up for St. Patrick's Day, nowhere to go. Yeah, you know, one of the weirdest images, and it wasn't that day, but I'll never forget this. It was like a scene in some dystopian movie, but it was what had been Halsted or Broadway. I was riding my bicycle to and from work during much of the pandemic because the streets were kind of empty and I wanted to get out and exercise. So I'd ride to work on my bike. And one day on southbound Halsted or Broadway, there is a guy on a unicycle, one of those real tall ones like they have at the circus. He's maybe like 8 or 10 feet up in the air. And he's riding a unicycle with a full set of golf clubs on his back down the middle of the street in the middle of the day. I've never seen any of those things. And now I just didn't know what to make of it. It was just, you know, it was so appropriate almost because it was just such a bizarre world we're living in. So the bizarrest thing you could imagine in a busy city street would be a guy on an 8-foot unicycle with a full set of golf clubs on his back. And there he was, the only guy on the road. Eric Zorn joins us now, the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel, a weekly newsletter containing commentary, comedy, and more. He'll sign you up for free if you just email ericzorn@gmail.com. Hi, Eric Zorn.
Hey, John. I actually remember that day very well. We recorded a podcast on you and I did with our Mincing Rascals panel on the morning of March 11th, 2020. And it was a very eerie day because news kept coming in, and you've just already cited what the, you know, all the news reports that were coming in about Tom Hanks and Rudy Gobert, the Utah Jazz center, tested positive, and we had just gotten a couple of two all staff memos at the Tribune offices, which were in the Prudential Center at the time, and they were outlining these work from home options, and so I got back from recording the podcast, and I just packed up as much stuff as I could from my desk and said, well, I better go home now for a few weeks because this will blow over, but I better have all my stuff. And the truth is that I never really went back. I went back for one day in the middle of the summer to get the rest of my stuff. And then, of course, the Tribune closed down the Prudential Center offices, and I left the Tribune. It was my last day at work, and I didn't know it. It wasn't one of the, you know, usually when you leave work, there's this ceremony and you carry out your banker's box and everybody, you know, pats you on the back and says, nice to know you and everything like that. But this was, just, it was such an eerie day. I remember it very strongly.
I heard from teachers today and yesterday who had a class full of students, and they said, all right, it looks like maybe we're not coming back tomorrow, but I'll see you later this year, semester, or whatever. And they never saw those kids again, right? Because those kids either went on to the next grade or the teacher retired. But it was so sad for so many teachers who are so vested in the lives of their kids. And all of a sudden, boop, they're gone, you're gone, and you never even had a chance to say good luck.
Well, and there was that feeling that we had, which is that this was temporary. If you remember, I remember my kids came back from college, and there was a sense like, well, they'll be back in time for graduation, certainly. I mean, that's in June or late May. It'll be fine by then. And then it settled in, and we realized we were in for a really long haul.
And that we've made it to here. We've made it to here. By the way, I'm not going to read all of this, but can I just read the first two paragraphs of the ballot issue, this referendum in Chicago about the increase and decrease of the real estate transfer tax? Have you seen how it's worded?
I have not actually seen the wording on the ballot, no. Okay. Is it gobbledygook?
Will you be the judge? Producer Pete voted already, and he took a screenshot of the ballot so I can read for you exactly what you will see. And I don't know if bring Chicago home means anything to people. That's campaign jargon, but it's actually a policy. And the thrust of it is embedded in this issue on the ballot, where when you buy and sell real estate in Chicago, some of us will pay less and some will pay more. And the question is, do you want to do that? So here is the question. Shall the city of Chicago impose a real estate transfer tax decrease of 20% to establish a new transfer tax rate of $3 for every $500 of the transfer price or fraction thereof for that part of the transfer price under $1 million to be paid by the buyer of the real estate transferred unless the buyer is exempt from the tax solely by operation of state law, in which case the tax is to be paid by the seller, and a real estate transfer tax increase of 166.67% to establish a new tax rate of $10 for every $500 of the transfer price or fraction thereof for that part of the transfer price between $1 million and $1.5 million inclusive to be paid by the buyer of the real estate. That's just the beginning of it. It goes on and on like that.
The sound we just heard was radios snapping off throughout Chicago.
No, that was people leaning in going, yeah, John, give me some more of that. That's gold.
Or drivers driving off the road and after falling asleep. No, that's very complicated. And I noticed that the opening sentence of that referendum question has to do with a decrease in the property tax for lower valued property. And, of course, as you and I have talked about before, there's no need for a referendum to decrease property transfer taxes. The city council could just do that. And that's the crux of this legal fight that's going on. It's now been escalated up to the Illinois Supreme Court, where the Building Owners Association and a bunch of other interest groups are trying to get this question taken off the ballot. Now, it wouldn't literally be taken off the ballot, but they would rule that you don't count the votes and it has no effect. Because the voting takes place in a week from today, so it's the ballots have been printed. A lot of people have voted already, but the question is, can you put something in there, a little sweetener, an irrelevant sweetener, arguably, in order to get people to approve the increase in taxes? Which, if you read through that gobbledygook, you'll see that what they're talking about is they're raising the rate of the property transfer tax on properties of $1 million and over, and then they're lowering it very slightly on property that's under $1 million. You could say it in a sentence, but of course they have to do several pages of gobbledygook.
So there should be sort of then a condensed version of it, the reader-friendly version of it, but the wording of that would be contentious, but okay, then contench, figure it out, because this is meaningless to people. This means nothing.
I think that's right, and I believe it was the Sun-Times this morning or yesterday, sometime this week, the Sun-Times did a story where they talked to people who had voted and asked them about it. Some of them were like, yeah, I think that was the Bring Chicago Home thing, but I'm not sure. I didn't understand it. And some people who, I guess, skipped voting because they looked at it and it just looked like completely arcane jargon. So they didn't vote.
You're right. Bring Chicago Home does not appear on this ballot.
Right, and it probably should, and there needs to be a one paragraph summary of the referendum so people can remember what it was about. And there was somebody they interviewed said he'd been studying the issue for 6 months.
And Was that Austin?
It wasn't Austin, but I know our friend Austin Berg is very involved in the campaign against this referendum.
Well, let me transfer. A lot of people. I want to segue to that, Eric. So Austin Berg from the Illinois Policy Institute appears on this radio show sometimes, but is a weekly panelist on the Mincing Rascals podcast, and he's fired up about what the Chicago Teachers Union is going to do on Friday. Catch me up on that. They've got this vote. If you are in high school but you're of an age to vote, the CTU, the Chicago Teachers Union, wants to host a rally. Am I right about that?
They're hosting a rally on March 15th, which is Friday, and they are getting students to be bused into the union headquarters, and they are having a rally. They're partnering with Chicago Votes, La Casa Norte, Bring Chicago Home, and some other organizations to get students out to vote. And it's clearly an effort to get them out to vote for the Bring Chicago Home referendum, which the union is for. That's their right to agitate for it. And La Casa Norte is an organization, the executive director published an op-ed in this morning's Sun-Times advancing the Bring Chicago Home ordinance. So it has a real feel of a rally to get students to get out and vote for the Bring Chicago Home ordinance, which it's okay for the union to have a position on political matters. They do that all the time. But to haul kids out of school for a rally that has this definite political partisan purpose.
Well, do you know, are they going to tell the kids how to vote at this rally? Or are they just going to say, here's an issue and you ought to be informed? It's a civics, Eric.
You don't know that, but you have to look at who they're partnering with. This is an announcement that was leaked yesterday, or I don't know if it was leaked, but it was mailed out to a bunch of teachers. And it looks, I think you could, there's no way to read it without reading it. You know, look who they're partnering with. It'd be like we're partnering with the Democratic Party to have this rally. It looks like they're trying to get students out to vote a certain way. And I think no matter how you feel about this referendum, you have to say, like, is it really appropriate to haul kids out of school and then have this rally that's sponsored by organizations or partnered with some organizations that are trying to get people to vote a certain way? That doesn't pass a smell test for me.
I'm surprised CPS is cooperating with that. I mean, even if the Chicago Public School system supports this, I don't know where they are on this. Clearly the union, the teachers are for it. But I wonder how it is that the schools are letting the kids out for this.
Well, Austin's organization, the Illinois Policy Institute, has filed an ethics complaint with the city's inspector general and with Chicago Public Schools. And I haven't seen anything yet to reflect how that complaint has gone. It's obviously fairly urgent matter. They've got to get it decided by Friday, which is when this get out the vote rally is. And they're going to take kids from this rally to early voting sites. And again, I think it's really a great idea to get kids involved and get kids voting. I think if you're suggesting to them how to vote, you've crossed a line. And again, I think this is totally independent of whether you agree with Austin about the referendum or with the CTU about the referendum. It just doesn't pass the smell test to be trying to champion a certain cause for these student voters.
Here's another topic for you. It's 11:47 on WGN. That's Eric Zorn, the one-time Tribune columnist, now the publisher of a newsletter called the Picayune Sentinel that you can get for free. And you wrote in your latest issue, Sunday, the Tribune ran an excerpt from Gregory Royal Pratt's upcoming book, The City is Up for Grabs, How Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot Led and Lost a City in Crisis. I was intrigued, you wrote, and pleased to see that the paper chose to print the raw language of some exchanges Lightfoot had during the vandalism and destruction that accompanied the 2020 protests following the murder of George Floyd. You saw some words in the paper on Sunday you will never see. More, you realized this pandemic was for real, scenes from a pandemic. 4 years ago today and yesterday, John, I was at the grocery store and there was a woman touching all of the grapes in all of the bags. And I yelled at her to stop doing that, asked her if she knew there was a pandemic going on. John, I realized the pandemic was real when I was called and told my St. Patrick's Day hip replacement was canceled. John, the schools closed in our town and the brats were home. They didn't go out to play. We didn't get out of the house. It drove the adults to start begging for booze. You knew this pandemic was real when ... and the list goes on. There was one other I was going to mention here. John, I didn't realize we were supposed to hoard groceries. My first trip to the grocery made me so sad. I almost cried at the empty shelves of frozen pizza. I was shopping at the Jewel, says 708, turned a corner to the Clorox wipes aisle, and a woman was putting the last two in her cart. I went back week after week. The wipes were not restocked for over a year. Eric Zorn. Now 4 years and a day later. Is that you sobbing over there?
I'm remembering how we used to wipe down our groceries for like 2 months or so. We'd wipe down our groceries and the mail would come in and we'd like handle it with plastic gloves. And man, that was just a very weird time. I think in retrospect, it wasn't necessary to wipe off our cereal boxes and so on.
But I'm going to insert this, but let that be a good reminder of how when Anthony Fauci or any of the other people at the CDC changed some of their protocols, it was because none of us knew what we had here or how to deal with it. You didn't want to touch your nose because you thought the germ might be on your hand. We didn't realize how much it was airborne rather than contact-borne. It was just a very strange time.
I have strong memories of this face touching thing. We went to Zoom meetings right away at the Tribune, so everyone was home on Zoom and just watching people in the little boxes and watching how people touch their face a lot, and it was a really hard habit to try to break. And I remember being very, very conscious of it. And of course, all that stuff is gone now. The only time I'll wear a mask is like on an airplane or on a CTA train or something like that. And I see people still who wear masks outside when they're just out walking.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. I think you're seeing more of that. I was on the train today and the people sitting to my right and left had masks on.
Yeah, on train it makes sense to me, right?
Yeah, sure. But I think I'm sensing a wave of caution, just a small wave, maybe just a tide coming in of caution. More and more people seem to be wearing masks where we were so ready to get rid of them. So about this Sunday Tribune excerpt of The City is Up for Grabs, a new book out by Greg Pratt, and the book has Lori Lightfoot quotes, and she drops F-bombs and S-bombs left and right, and they ran those words in the newspaper. Your thoughts?
I was really surprised. They did that famously after the Richard Nixon tapes were released, and this is well before you and I were in town, but the Tribune got some national news coverage for daring to print the expletives that all the other papers were deleting. And I was really surprised to see in the Tribune that they had decided they were quoting Mayor Lightfoot and they quote Alderman Lopez dropping these bombs, and they just used the words. And it felt really appropriate to me that you're quoting public officials using this language at a really rough time. And these words, those two that you mentioned, are so part of everyday discourse that it doesn't seem all that unusual to have a newspaper, which is read by adults. Let's be honest. The idea of a family newspaper really is kind of outmoded. I don't think children look at the newspaper anymore. They're on their phones like everybody else. And so I thought it was perfectly fine for them to do it. I checked with Chris Jones, who was the editor who made that decision, and he just said, hey, I thought that public officials are using this kind of language on the day. And the day that he's writing about was the day of when the George Floyd protests had gotten out of hand in the city. And he said that it was a fair accounting of those events requires us printing exactly what they said. And I asked him, I said, are people complaining? And he said, no, there had been no complaints yet. Which I'm glad that readers are mature enough to see those words, and they hear them all the time on streaming TV now. I feel like, and I understand the prohibition. The FCC has a prohibition against broadcast outlets using some of these words because you never know when a radio's on or TV's on who's going to be in the room. But if you got somebody reading something, I think it's perfectly fine to judiciously use the words that everybody uses all the time. So
I'm with you on that. And frankly, I think the FCC needs to reconsider that. What would happen if somebody heard a word they didn't like? It's the word maybe they don't like, and yet we talk about all of these other violent or unfortunate things. What's more offensive? And besides, if it's a public official, I think we need to be very square about exactly what they said. And I don't. I'll just leave it at that. We're out of time, Eric. The Mincing Rascals podcast drops tomorrow. We've got a lot to talk about. I'm interested in the State of the Union address and the follow-up to the State of the Union address, and this CTU story will be on that on the podcast tomorrow.
I'll look forward to it, John. Thank you.
Eric Zorn is the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel. Email him and he'll set you up. Eric Zorn at gmail.com.